U of I unveils final plans for its Discovery Partners campus in the South Loop. And I'll talk with Graham Meyer, who writes the big ticket column for Cranes, about can't-miss arts and culture events for the month ahead.
The International Film Festival this year, the opener is a documentary called A Compassionate Spy. It's about scientist Ted Hall, who passed nuclear secrets to the Soviets.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist for Monday, September 26th. At Wintrust Community Banks, you're more than just another account number. No matter your stage of life, Wintrust's dependable bankers are as dedicated to your financial success as you are. After three decades of serving communities across Chicagoland, Wintrust has built its reputation on exceptional customer satisfaction and a strong local presence. That's why Wintrust is proud to be ranked number one in customer satisfaction in retail banking in Illinois by J.D. Power. Visit Wintrust.com/JD Power to learn more about Wintrust's award-winning banking experience. Members FDIC. For J.D. Power 2022 award information, visit JDPower.com/awards. I'm joined by Graham Meyer, who writes the big ticket column for Cranes, here to talk about can't miss arts and culture events for the month ahead. Hey, Graham, welcome back.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
As ever, lots of things to talk about. I think let's start today by talking about what's happening at Steppenwolf, their theater for young adults.
They are putting on a brand new play called 1919, and it's about the real life historical event where a Black teenager named Eugene Williams was murdered on a Chicago beach, and it sparked race rioting. It was part of an event called the Red Summer that has been back in historical interest, and artistic things that have been happening anew have been harking back to the Red Summer. There's a play called Red Summer recently, and it was part of the backdrop in the play Relentless, which I bet a lot of people remember because it was a big hit for Timeline that went to Goodman. Mm-hmm. The source material for 1919 is a book of poetry by Eve L. Ewing, who is a fascinating cultural figure in Chicago. And I'm always following what she's doing because I think she's so fascinating. She is a sociologist. She specifically studies education. And she's also a poet. Obviously, she wrote this book, 1919. And she also writes comic books. The series Ironheart is her series. And I am really excited to see what they could do with this book of poetry, especially when it's geared toward young adult audiences. It's in their Theater for Young Adults series that they do.
That's going to be fascinating. And I think that's so interesting to have Eve Ewing's work as the source material. I think that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they've adapted what was originally poetry. And I should stress, you know, with the big ticket, I'm always trying to tell people when they should be buying tickets for things. This runs from October 4th to 29th. So you might look at those dates and think there's tons of time to see it. But for public shows, they're only doing weekend performances. All of the weekday stuff is student matinees that they're doing. And those are all sold out. So buy your tickets soon if you want to go to a public performance. Otherwise, you're stuck trying to find a kid that you can chaperone on their field trip.
Right, like borrowing someone's kids just so you can go with them.
Right.
All right, let's take a look at what's happening at the Goodman.
Yeah, another great play at a great theater. Swing State is the name of a new play that they have running October 7th to November 13th. And the reason this play jumped out to me is there's a whole like getting the band back together feel to this. The playwright is Rebecca Gilman, who has done a lot of plays with the Goodman. I think this is number 10 that she's done with them. And four of the previous plays won the local theater award, the Joseph Jefferson Award for Best Play. So Rebecca Gilman's doing a play. She's done a million of Goodman. The director of the play is Robert Falls, who is the outgoing artistic director of the Goodman. When you listen to this, he'll still be the artistic director, but by the time Swing State starts, he will have switched over. And he did five previous Gilman plays, and this will be his sixth doing that. And furthermore, the lead role is played by Mary Beth Fisher, who has done three other Gilman plays at the Goodman. So it's a lot of people who have worked together to make some very successful theater in the past. So it seems very promising. That's about all I can say about it, because everything is written in a vague way about what it's actually about. It's definitely about a woman named Peg who lives in Wisconsin. That's the swing states part. And it's a portrait of America's heartland, it says. But then it says things in it like, a string of events unfold that forever changes their lives. So they've really gone the no spoilers route in telling us about the play.
I think that's every play and movie ever, the string of events that changes them.
I think that must be right. There's always a string of events changing something, or else it would be a really boring theater or movie.
Right, right. If it was just character got up and washed the dishes and watched some TV, it would not right. be make for good viewing. Well, very interesting and mysterious. Okay, so that's happening at the Goodman. And then what about at the Lyric Opera?
Well, the thing I wanted to highlight at Lyric Opera is a one-night-only recital that is Renee Fleming, the world-renowned soprano who has worked as Lyric's creative consultant for a while now. She's been putting together a lot of projects with Lyric, with new music, new opera, new vocal stuff. She hasn't been on the stage herself in a while, so it's a treat to have her on the stage. And the centerpiece of this recital, which she's sharing with a baritone named Rod Guilfrey, is a song cycle with orchestra for the two singers. The title of it is The Brightness of Light, and the text of the song cycle comes from letters between Georgia O'Keeffe, the painter, and Alfred Stieglitz, the photographer, who were married. And it's set by Kevin Putz, contemporary composer of orchestral and opera music, who is one of the best known opera composers now. He wrote an opera called Silent Night that's about World War I that people may have heard of that was a big hit.
That's so interesting. Here's another adaptation, you know, taking a look at the source material and trying to imagine how that's been adapted. That seems so interesting. Letters from Georgia O'Keeffe, even. You're thinking, how does that translate to Renee Fleming?
Yeah, I always find it interesting when it's not a libretto written as fiction like that. You know, there's a certain sort of real life quality to it when it's not always smoothed over, you know, it's not always made into a precise arc, or there's a question raised by something that's not answered later on in a way that it would be in fiction. So I always find that fascinating.
That's super interesting. So that's October the 8th.
October 8th, that Lyric, yeah.
And then it is time for the Chicago International Film Festival. Always a lot going on there, a lot of things to see and take in. It can be a little bit overwhelming, but that's upon us coming up soon too.
It is October 12th to 23rd. Most of it is at the AMC River East. The big opener and closer and big event are at the Music Box. They have, you know, a zillion films and many of them sell out. It's a good idea to go look at the website and see if there are any you're interested in going to, especially if you think you might want to go to the opener or the closer. The opener is a documentary called A Compassionate Spy. It's about the scientist Ted Hall, who passed nuclear secrets to the Soviets, but he did it for altruistic reasons. He was hoping that the world would reach a situation where nobody would be using nuclear weapons because of the mutual deterrence. So the documentarian of that is Steve James. It's a name that Chicagoans might recognize. He made Hoop Dreams way back in the 90s. And just recently, he had that multi-part documentary called City So Real that a lot of people were watching during lockdown. He's great. And that should be a great event and a really interesting documentary. Another big one that's happening there is the Knives Out sequel called Glass Onion is going to be playing. A lot of these movies that are the big ones like that are movies that you'll be able to see later on. This is like your chance to see it during the festival season. And it might come out in November or December if it's one of the really big movies. Like Glass Onion, you'll get another shot at it. If you want to see it with the red carpet experience and the big festival experience, then now's your moment. But some of these, they don't necessarily come back. So those are the ones that are worth, you know, digging for gems on. couple that are a little harder to find there. I don't know anything about whether they'll be back in November and December, but there's a movie called The Banshees of Inisherin, which is by Martin McDonagh. He did the movies In Bruges and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. He's also done a lot of plays. I mentioned his play The Pillow Man, which was remounted a few months ago here. You know, he's a fascinating guy. A lot of his things are Irish. Banshees of Inisherin is set on an Irish island where one friend decides he doesn't want to be friends with another friend. It sounds really interesting. It's the same two guys who were the leads in Bruges also. And another one that I thought sounded interesting that I wanted to point out is called The Lost King, which is a fictionalization of the weird story from about 10 years ago where people were looking for the bones of Richard III. Do you remember this?
I do, yes.
And then they found them. Right? They found them underneath a parking lot in Leicester. So it's a fictionalization of that story of trying to find those bones. And Sally Hawkins and Steve Coogan are the two leads in that.
That seems like a wide swath of a whole lot of different types of films there. That'll be great.
Yeah, there's a lot to see.
But then also there's the Chicago Humanities Festival. It's all festivals here in October.
I know. October 13th to December 9th is the dates that they're officially putting on the fall festival. You know, they do things periodically, one-offs throughout the year. So they're just kind of bracketing those dates as the fall festival. The main part of the Fall Humanities Festival is on four successive Saturdays from October 22nd to November 13th. And they're all clustered in a single geographic area. So there's one in Northwestern's Evanston campus, there's one in Hyde Park, there's one around Southport and Lakeview, and there's one in Lincoln Park. And they're spaces that they used in the spring for their spring festival. The fall festival is bigger than the spring festival. The spaces they used in spring were really big, and it was the first kind of time back for the Humanities Festival. And now they're back like with their big festival, and some of these spaces are kind of small. So things will sell out as they used to in the old days. You know, it's nice to have the Humanities Festival back, not so nice to have the sellouts back. I know that the event with Phil Rosenthal is already sold out. So on this one also, look at the schedule and see if you want to plan a day, you should get your tickets sooner. And there were a couple that I wanted to point out that I thought sounded really cool. In the Northwestern Day on October 22nd, Miranda July, the filmmaker and writer, is going to talk with Carrie Brownstein from Portlandia. I thought that sounded really interesting.
I mean, that seems like one to definitely not miss.
And there's still tickets for that, or at least there were when I looked this morning as we're recording this.
Sure.
Seymour Hersh is going to be talking in Hyde Park on October 29th. It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about the last 5 or 10 years. And then at the Music Box on that Southport Day, November 6th, Jim Jarmusch, the filmmaker, is going to talk with the author Jonathan Ames. I don't know what they're going to talk about exactly together, but it should be, it's two very interesting people.
Yeah, I would say that'll be another interesting meeting of the minds there.
Yeah, for sure.
But then we can't wrap without another event that perhaps you are involved in. Tell me about this.
I am. I joined a semi-pro choir. So this is a little bit of a shameless plug. Full disclosure, I am in this event performing. It's a brand new choir. It's called Vox Venti. There's about 30 of us. We'll be singing mostly things that are contemporary choral music, including one that's very contemporary by the local composer Stacy Garup, who composed it to premiere at this event. It's at Wicker Park Lutheran Church on October 8th. The choir is run by Ed Fraser Davis, who is a composer and conductor here. He is the son of Sir Andrew Davis of lyric fame and Gianna Rolandi, the soprano. Mm. It'd be great if people could come out for that too. It's a brand new choir. It's news that way, but I'm also shamelessly plugging it because I'm singing in it.
You know, I believe in having zero shame in talking about the work that we're doing. And, you know, we shouldn't have shame about the work we're doing, especially work we're excited about and proud of. So I say, everybody, go to that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. And hopefully we will cross paths at some of these events, especially that last one.
Yeah. Well, I'll be there for sure.
You'll be there for sure. Indeed. All right. Well, we'll talk next time. Thanks so much, Graham.
Thank you.
Coming up, Boeing agrees to pay $200 million to settle an SEC probe over the once globally grounded 737 MAX. We'll talk about that and more right after this. The Greater Chicago Food Depository is facing elevated need right now. Food insecurity is above pre-pandemic levels, with decade-high inflation making it even harder for our neighbors to afford groceries. And families with children are at greatest risk of hunger. Inflation and hunger affect us all, because only a hunger-free community can truly be healthy. Let's rise to the challenge, Chicago. Please support the Greater Chicago Food Depository now by visiting chicagosfoodbank.org. University of Illinois officials released final renderings and a construction timetable for the $250 million-plus headquarters of its Discovery Partners Institute, a long-awaited action that will bring an academic and research facility to the South Loop and potentially kickstart work on the huge but slow-to-advance megadevelopment, the 78. The steel and glass facility set to rise toward the southern end of developer-related Midwest development at the southwest corner of Roosevelt and Clark will reportedly provide more than 200,000 square feet of office, classroom, lab, and event space for DPI and private industry associates. Though conversations with City Hall about possible infrastructure subsidies and with the University of Illinois system about future use are still underway, Related Midwest President Kurt Bailey said Related will now immediately launch work on four other buildings, including a lab that would count the university as a major tenant, an incubator for startup companies, a retail structure, and a university gathering center. Bailey also pegged the cost of the four buildings at $400 million. He said he hopes to begin construction around the time work on the headquarters begins in early 2024, with construction complete by 2026. The COVID-19 transmission risk for Chicago and Cook County returned to low as of Thursday evening. That according to data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The region returned to low risk after more than a month at medium risk. Chicago and Cook County were both teetering between medium and high risk for most of the summer. As of September 21st, Chicago saw 102 new COVID cases per 100,000 people over the last 7 days and 7.1 new hospital admissions per 100,000 people over the same period, according to the data. Meanwhile, Cook County, broadly, including the city of Chicago, reported 116 new COVID cases per 100,000 people over the last 7 days and 9.6 new hospitalizations per 100,000 people during the same time period. At a public health briefing on Tuesday, when Chicago was still considered at medium risk, Chicago's health commissioner, Dr. Allison Arwady, said the region would return to low risk once new hospitalizations dropped below 10, metrics defined by the CDC. Data shows that all COVID cases across the U.S. are being caused by Omicron variants, most of which are the BA.5 strain. The new and available booster vaccines are designed to prevent infection from Omicron variants. And nearly 80% of Chicagoans have received at least one dose of a COVID vaccine, and 70 have received two doses, according to CDPH data, though that percentage is not evenly distributed throughout the city. The University of Chicago's Business School is tied with Harvard in the number two spot for the best MBA program in the country, according to Bloomberg Businessweek's 2022-23 Best B Schools report. And that's a two-spot jump from 2021, when the U of C's Booth School of Business was ranked fourth in the same report. The Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern moved up to the number four spot in this year's ranking from fifth place. Stanford retained its spot as Bloomberg's top business school in the U.S. Both Illinois schools surpassed Dartmouth's Tuck School of Business, which fell from number two to number five. These rankings are based on surveys of graduating students, recent alumni, and companies that recruit MBAs. Evaluation indexes include compensation, learning, networking, entrepreneurship, and diversity. Crane's Jack Grieve reported that business schools are also experiencing a new wave of popularity after applications to the best programs spiked amid the pandemic, reversing several years of falling numbers. Online programs, including the fully remote iMBA program offered by the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, are also gaining more traction, though many elite institutions have resisted shifting their hallmark MBA programs to fully online formats. Boeing has agreed to pay $200 million to settle SEC allegations that the company and its former CEO, Dennis Muilenburg, failed to disclose safety issues with its 737 MAX jetliner, resolving one of the final U.S. investigations related to two crashes that killed a total of 346 people. Bloomberg reported that the settlement, announced by the SEC on Thursday, concludes a probe into whether Boeing withheld key information from shareholders about a flawed software system linked to the 2018 and 2019 crashes. The SEC said the company and its former CEO violated securities laws by making materially misleading public statements. Without admitting or denying the findings, Boeing and Muilenburg agreed to pay $200 million and $1 million, respectively, to settle the allegations. Boeing shares were little changed after the close of Thursday's trading session. The stock has declined about 31% so far this year. The two crashes prompted one of the longest groundings in aviation history. Boeing previously paid a $243.3 million fine as part of a $2.5 billion settlement with the U.S. Justice Department to end a criminal investigation in January of 2021. That's Crane's Daily Gist for now. Check in on our continuous news feed at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks so much to today's guest, Crane's contributor, Graham Meyer. You can follow all of our conversations on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to get your audio on demand. Don't forget to subscribe and please rate and review Crane's Daily Gist. Our show is produced by Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll meet you right back here next time.